Boom, what up? Hello, bonjour, and hola, real leaders. This is Kevin Edwards, your host here, and I am so excited you're tuning in to one of our amazing experiences. What you're about to hear is going to be fresh, real, and loaded with inspiration, guaranteed to support your impact journey. So sit back, enjoy the listen, folks, share a review afterward, and always keep it real.
Five, four, going in 3, 2, and 1. Welcome, everyone, to this episode of the Real Leaders Podcast. That's right. I'm your host, Kevin Edwards. And alongside me today, folks, you've probably heard him on the podcast already. It's our former sponsor, the wise, the wonderful, the one and only Mr. Brad Stevens, the founder and CEO of Outsource Access. Brad, my man, thanks for coming on the show today.
Love being with you, Kevin. Always explore some fun topics and have a good time with you. So let's have at it, have fun, and what's the third one?
Have an open mind.
Exactly. I'm prepped and ready.
All right, fantastic. Well, hopefully not too prepped. Well, Brad, let's just, you know, I think it's always important to kind of kick off a podcast with a story. So when I ask you the question, what moment comes to mind in your entrepreneurial journey that was the most challenging time in your entrepreneurial journey, what moment comes to mind? What time? What is it? Share.
Well, all the entrepreneurs you've had on this, they probably have about 100 things that then jump in their brain all of a sudden. So they got to pick out the one, because the entrepreneurial path is certainly not for the faint of heart. But for me, you know, and it's a big inflection point that led to the business that I'm in now. And you never know where these interesting turns in the road are going to end up being, was with my last business. So I've been an entrepreneur my entire life, and my last business before leading to Outsource Access, we manufactured and distributed teeth whitening products all over the world. So an interesting niche, for the beauty industry and for the dental industry. So we had accounts by 18 countries internationally, and we had a partner manufacturer we worked with, and so provided professional and cosmetic whitening products for the beauty and the dental industry. Growing that business, it was back 10 plus years ago, and we had one product that was a teeth whitening pen product that had teeth whitening gel on one side. It was actually a teeth whitening hydrogen peroxide gel on one side. And on the other side, it was a lip gloss, lip plumper, which were a big thing back in the day, not as much today, but it was a double-sided product, had a little mini LED lights. It was called our Chick Flick pen. And it was one of the mini products that we sold in our business as one of our retail products. And you can imagine women loved it. The mini LED lights, you could brush on and kind of brush the teeth whitening gel on to whiten your teeth. You could put the lip gloss, lip plumper on your lips that made them nice and shine. And we had sold a ton of the product to both our beauty industry clients, our dental industry clients, had a bunch of visibility in the space, even had a couple of celebrities ended up picking it up. And it was on Us Weekly magazine, like Selena Gomez ended up having and holding this thing. And we're like, wow, this could be its own product, its own company on its own. This, like, this Chick Flick teeth whitening lip gloss pen. And so we'd sold thousands and thousands of units. We had a manufacturer partner we worked with in Taiwan that was a very high-end cosmetic manufacturer. They would do manufacture and the pen portion of it and do the lip gloss, and they would ship it to our partner in California to fill the whitening gel portion of it and put it in the package and then ship it to our clients. And so lots and lots of success with that product. And so the next batch that we ordered, we took about 10,000 of them, and that's the batch that we were going to be sending to all the major beauty editors and bloggers out there to really get a lot of visibility for it. Well, little did we know that one of the suppliers for that product ended up changing the bioadhesive glue that holds the little brush on the portion that fills the teeth whitening gel, right? Now, again, this is a high-end cosmetic manufacturer, right? ISO, certified. They created cosmetics for some of the highest end, beauty lines out there. But this just goes to show you, as an entrepreneur, right? You can measure 10 times, cut once, and still, something happens. So one of the suppliers, it was still a bioadhesive glue, so it was safe, right? But it was a little bit cheaper. And it was like, there's like 50 plus suppliers involved in this product, changed the glue that held it on. So the teeth whitening, the lip gloss portion got filled in Taiwan, shipped it over. Our manufacturer, as standard, filled the teeth whitening gel on the side that had the little brush with the hydrogen peroxide with the teeth whitening gel, screwed it on, put it in the package, shipped it out. Well, nothing would happen immediately, but this new glue would react with the hydrogen peroxide in a way that we weren't, we didn't know about, because we need to test anything. So somebody changed the chemistry on it, it would react, it would build up gas in the end of this little pin. And so one of two things would happen, Kevin. One is, A, it would build up enough gas and crack, and it would basically ooze all over the shelves or the purses of our clients after it got out into the marketplace. Or it would build up enough gas, it wouldn't crack. But by the time you went to unthread it, and by the time you got to the last thread, it would shoot across the room. Like at a velocity, would almost like punch a hole in the wall. So in essence, we shipped about 10,000 grenades all over the world. And to the top beauty bloggers and editors out there to test this wonderful new product to see if we could make it a big, big, big run. So you can imagine that was a very dark moment. There were some other things concurrently we were kind of navigating, but very successful product. All of a sudden we shipped these out. And the problem is when you filled the whitening gel, the reaction wouldn't happen immediately. So it would take about 2 months, right? So just enough time for it to get out to the shelves, get out to all of our clients and so forth before this issue started happening. So that was a disaster moment that occurred. But the positive side is it forced me to learn the whole offshoring outsourcing world. Here we are, cash is tight. I'm having to send refunds left and right all over the place, praying I'm not going to get a lawsuit happening any kind of day. And I'd heard about this whole outsourcing offshoring world, read Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Work Week. And I was at a place where I had to make a move and make cash kind of get stretched further and navigate through this mess. And so I started diving into the whole world of outsourcing and offshoring and finding these different platforms and how you find people, how do you work with them, which countries, what are they capable of, what can they do, innovative, creative things. And long story short, learning that world ended up helping me save that company at the time by being able to find innovative ways to do things more cost effectively. And so we ended up being able to actually sell that company to our manufacturer after we got on the other side of it. And I was left with this knowledge base of this outsourcing offshoring, which I fell in love with and did some speaking consulting. And then it translated to me launching Outsource Access, which has been the most exciting entrepreneurial venture as we've grown to 500 people in, you know, 5 years that I never, ever would have had if somebody hadn't changed a product and caused teeth whitening pins to blow up all over the world.
Isn't that interesting, though? It's like through failure, it breeds new life. And when we think about whether you're an entrepreneur or you're just, you know, someone listening to this show, if you think about like a vacation that comes to mind, it's probably a vacation that, you know, had a lot of turmoil, you know, as a vacation that, you know, maybe the wheels fell off the car, but it's always the one you remember. And it's always the one that teaches you the lessons that you need. So an impactful story that you shared there. Now, being a CEO, right, your goal is to maximize your time with the scarce resources that you have, right? It's everyone's kind of job, right? So tell me a little bit more about, you know, now that we've started Outsource Access, like what was that like getting off the ground? I know you have a special story, of course, with JCell.
Yeah, I mean, as far as the, you know, I mean, maximizing my time is kind of, you know, a bucket on its own in terms of how I operate from a day-to-day, you know, efficiency. But I mean, you going back to that moment in time of finding, you know, my path into Outsource Access was, you know, the first kind of venture for me was I had all this knowledge around it, and I found a lot of entrepreneurs, you know, back, you know, 10, you know, 7, 8 years ago. You know, when it comes to small to medium businesses, you know, most people think of outsourcing and offshoring as something for big companies, like it's call centers and it's 10,000 employees and it's, you know, AT&T and it's, you know, all these big, big companies, but didn't really think it was for them, right? And so a lot of what I found is I wanted to share the journey of how me as a small to medium business owner was able to embrace this and truly redefine how I was able to grow and save the business. So I found myself doing a lot of educating and speaking, you know, 80, 90, you know, EO chapters out there. People are familiar with EO and YPO and Vistage and others. And I would have this 2-3 hour workshop called Redefining How You Scale with Offshore Virtual Talent. And people would come in the room with a certain perception. And at the end of that workshop, people's eyes were wide open of like, they had no idea that that's what this world was. And I would share tons of case studies and examples and help them get clear on what all their constraint points are. And then I would do a lot of consulting for companies, come in and they're like, hey, we're interested in doing this offshore low cost thing. We're small to medium business. How does this actually work? So I'd spend hours with their entire management teams and figure out where their constraint points were. And it wasn't really about replacing people. You know, it was about augmenting existing people to their highest and best use and doing things that were on the radar that they weren't getting to at all. So that's kind of where I ended up spending my time, you know, between finishing the last business and before starting Outsource Access. I got a chance to just marinate and live in the world of hundreds, thousands of small to medium business owners of where they sat with this whole world of outsourcing and virtual and so forth before deciding to go ahead and pull the trigger and launch Outsource Access.
Yeah. And that's where I want to get to is like, let's not forget like this journey you're on. I mean, when I speak to you, sometimes you're flying to the Philippines, right? I mean, that takes a lot to get that off the ground, you know, in an entirely different country. Of course, they speak English and all that. But I want to hear about that initial like growth phase of the company. I've never heard that story from you. I'd love for you to share that with the world today.
Sure. Yeah, it was. So in my journey, you know, when I was doing the speaking and consulting stuff is when I found JCell, right? It was my very first VA that I found on a job board in the Philippines. And I'd never worked with people in the Philippines in the past and people were telling me about it. And I really came to clarity, understand why it's so different than the rest of Southeast Asia. Fast learners, good communicators, America controlled it up until like 1947. So Americanized culture, English speaking, and just honestly a service mentality and just a hunger to learn, right? And so I started working with JCell. She'd never even been a VA before. And just her aptitude to learn and quickly adapt. Like we were using Infusionsoft, which is the software we were using at the time. She had never used it before in her life. And in like a week, went in, watched all the FAQ videos, learned how to do it, even found a local place to go get certified that they were doing like a local tour, you know, internationally. And she sent me a certificate one day and said, "Hey, Brad, I got certified in Infusionsoft." Blew me away, right? To be honest, a lot of some of my employees, you know, sometimes I had in the stateside, it would take months to kind of get that level, but it was just a hunger to desire to learn because this was creating a path of opportunity for her and an income that she would have never been able to realize otherwise, you know, as far as what's available kind of locally. So, you know, I share that because that was the beginning. And then I added a second and a third. So I had a group of four or five people that were helping me just with my speaking and consulting business. And everybody kept saying, "Brad, you talk about this, you're passionate about it. Why don't you just go launch your own operation?" So I flew to the Philippines, found a guy there that was helping me, gave a business tour. He helps people that want to launch businesses in the Philippines. And so I toured 20 facilities in 5 days just to wrap my head around, what are the options if I want to launch? You know, do we want, you know, what's real estate? If we want to get an office building, where in the country do we want to launch? So we toured all over and we actually made this little mini documentary film that's available on our website, outsourceaccess.com. And ultimately decided we were going to base ourselves in the southern part of the Philippines because it's a little bit less competitive and intense than in Manila. And this was in 2019, mind you, right? Right before we all know what happened with the pandemic and the first part of 2020. And so it was middle of 2019, we got our first paying client to actually provide a virtual assistant for a client, you know, in the U.S., you know, for a fee. And then I had built a pretty good following, right, with all the speaking and thought leadership and authority, you know, and a testament to anybody on here in terms of building and the value that has tremendously that you take with you wherever you go in life. You know, I was able to activate immediately to that following. Hey, you know, I now got my shingle up. We have our own company, Outsource Access. We do this now. You know me as the thought leader around this. We now actually, we've taken all the learnings and failure points we saw of other companies in this space, and we architected Outsource Access in a very specific way to create a really meaningful, sustainable way for businesses in the US, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, to integrate and work with staff in the Philippines. And so yeah, that was the kickoff. And we ended up getting to about 80, 90 employees by the end of 2019. And then it just continued to grow from there. And so, you know, 4.5, we're almost at our 5-year mark. We're right around 500 employees. And you know, we're figuring out what our next stage is going to be. But that beginning stages was, you know, very, very unique. And we were taking on, you know, and I chose not to be industry specific. So we basically, what I realized is, and we currently service about 75 different industries right now, everything from a concrete manufacturer to, you know, an insurance agency, to a janitorial service, to a marketing agency. Any company honestly can integrate and leverage what we do. It's really about the mindset of the business owners. And so, so we chose not to be, you know, specific to industry, and honestly launching right before COVID, I saw how it took down certain industries. And so I was excited to be diversified and then doing all kinds of different functions in the business. We're doing marketing, operations, customer service, and so forth. That was phase one of our growth, and I'll share, but as we go to phase two, we have to change a little bit about what we're doing, but it allowed us to grow our initial base of our business to be hyper diversified. We're not super concentrated in any one particular industry or market, and we're doing a variety of different functions for our clients.
And full disclosure, you know, we use Outsource Access, and then we'll touch on that a little bit later. But you know, in the impact space, you know, the I guess what I was hearing about is, oh, you know, it's kind of offshoring, you know, it's kind of has this bad taste in your mouth. I mean, what are the misconceptions about outsourcing that you have to overcome in order to shift the, as you put it, the mindset of these CEOs?
Yeah, I mean, it's something I dealt with myself, right? Before I'd really kind of the teeth whitening pin disaster happened, I had a certain perception of what outsourcing and offshoring meant. You know, is it just a bad, you know, a tough accent with someone in another country, you know, with a customer service, you know, I had to call for my cable company, or, you know, what was it? So I have what I call DFCs, you know, doubts, fears, concerns about what this whole world was, until I went and immersed myself in it and started working like with that. These people. Yeah. And that's ultimately what, you know, most companies have. They have certain level of DFCs, doubt, fears, concerns, related to whatever your service is. So I had those all myself. So I went through that same journey as a business owner. Is what about, you know, what about accent? What about time zones? What about competency? What about security? What about, you know, longevity? You know, all of those different things. How is it going to integrate? How am I going to communicate with them? How am I going to get stuff out of my head over to them? How are my existing employees going to respond by me bringing offshore staff and integrating them? So all those are all the things, and I could go by and address all them kind of individually, but at a big picture level, those were the issues. And for me, from an impact standpoint, you know, one of the biggest things is the perception of it being a sweatshop environment as well, right? In terms of compensation and how people are paid. And, you know, and there's some, I mean, I've seen inside some of these operations that, you know, they're very, very rigid in kind of how they operate. So we wanted to set a foundation, and it started with the relationship Jaycel and I had from the very beginning. I mean, I paid her really, really well out of the gates as my very first VA of the Philippines. And, you know, a couple of months after she and I had started working together, she sent me a picture of this village of these children, you know, in a circle with these shoes all in a circle. And she said, "Brad, I just want you to know, because of the income I'm making, you know, with you, that I would never be able to kind of make here, you know, otherwise, you know, I'm able to make a good living for myself, but I was able to go buy all these shoes for these children in this village, that have to go walk an hour and a half to school every day." And so, you know, I've always had an impact, give back nature of everything I've done in my life kind of prior. And just before that, I got a chance to go speak at the headquarters for the United Nations in New York. And I learned about the Sustainable Development Goals as well. And so taking that kind of learning and seeing that from Jaycel, it just really clicked. You know, this is a win-win-win. You know, at the end of the day, I'm able to get a more affordable resource that can help me in my station of life and where I'm at in my business. She's making more income she's made, and she's able to even pay it forward back in her community. So, you know, one of the big things from a stigma standpoint is creating an environment and culture. So from that moment forward, I said, "Jaycel, I don't know where we're going to take this business, but I want to create a whole VA's give back kind of initiative." And so to this day, you know, we survey our employees every quarter. We do massive community give backs. They choose which of the sustainable development goals that they care about. You know, the last one we did, life on land, was the one they cared about. And we funded and we planted, I think, 300 or 400 trees to offset carbon emissions locally. We bought shoes. Last time I was in the Philippines in November, we bought 150 pairs of brand new school shoes for children, local elementary school, and brought food and lunch and everything kind of for them. So, you know, human beings fundamentally, you know, they want to be recognized that they exist, but they also want to be a part of something bigger than themselves. And so, you know, Outsource Access and our mission and what we're doing to support our clients and support our staff, we're also trying to have a big impact in the community. So that's one of the things, back to the stigmas, is we're creating an environment, a culture where we're investing back in the local community. We're paying our people well. We're taking care of them. We have incredible culture and leadership development programs and all kinds of things to make sure they're growing, but then we pay it back in the community.
I love that. And, you know, impact is such a vague, broad term. You know, people think they can have their own conceptions of impact. If anyone has a conception of impact, it's me. I mean, I've interviewed over 1,000 impact CEOs. And I think in a nutshell, at the end of the day, it's just transforming lives with your business. And clearly that's something that you're doing for, you know, this individual and her community, and now this culture that's thriving. But folks, we've got someone here on the show that has hired over 1,000 people in this short period of time, in over 4 years. And so I want to really get into the nuts and bolts. I mean, you're a student of Jim Collins, his work. You talk about him often in our meetings. When you think, Brad, about the keys to growth in your experience, what are some of those keys that you could share with us today?
Well, reflecting back, you know, on Jim Collins, and when people hear that name, you know, a lot of people, different things come to mind. You know, a lot of people remember, you know, think about Good to Great, which is one of the main books that he's kind of known for. But and I had read some of his stuff back in my early 20s, you know, when I had a much smaller business. And to be honest, it didn't quite hit me at home quite as much. And, you know, some of the case studies he shared were some older companies that I wasn't as kind of familiar with. But when we launched Outsource Access, one of the things we did is we implemented a framework called EOS, Entrepreneurial Operating System. And we had an implementer that helped us implement that, and particularly growing this thing, because I wasn't able to go back to the Philippines for 3 years, right? I mean, we launched this in 2019, then COVID hit. I had to run this thing virtually and remote, couldn't go back for 3 years. So I needed a framework and an operating system to kind of run the business. So EasyOS and our implementer that helped us kind of galvanize kind of our goal, our mission, our meeting structures, she had us all reread Good to Great together. And there's something about reading it through the lens of my business at the time. And I was also president of the EO, the Entrepreneurs Organization Atlanta chapter at the time, in the middle of COVID insanity. And so going through that, it was like I reread it for the first time, of like realizing maybe it's more maturity, being in probably my early 40s versus in my 20s, of realizing that those are some of the most timeless principles that any business now or 300 years from now can learn from. A business, an organization, even a family unit. And so all that being said, if you go back to Jim Collins, a lot of people don't realize, and if you take nothing from this, I would encourage all of you to go to jimcollins.com and then go and click on the thing called Concepts, because he's taken a lot of the people that know the books that he's written, but everybody I've talked to literally have no idea that on his website, if you go click on Concepts, he's taken all his books and reduced it down to this thing called the map. And it breaks it down into buckets, his key ideas, into disciplined people with disciplined thought, disciplined action. And he integrates all his different concepts, the hedgehog concept, the flywheel, the bullets before cannonballs. But to answer your first question, the beginning of that is it starts with disciplined people. And in that bucket, it's level 5 leadership and the right people on the bus. And this is the biggest thing I would go back to myself, and I'm going through right now in our business as we're kind of getting through our next growth phase, is it is just being fanatical about getting the best possible people around you. And that's one of the biggest things he observed in the companies he studied. And, you know, back in my 20s and thinking more from a budget mindset and so forth, I would hire kind of somebody that was like a 7, maybe a 6.5, a 7, maybe an 8, because they were a little bit less, you know, less expensive. And little to know that the 7s and 8s in our lives cost us more emotional intensity and frustration, that if you just paid the extra money, right? And sometimes it's not even money. It's just about finding the right person, getting nothing but 9.5s, 10s, and ideally 11s in your life and surrounding you. So that's the number one thing that I focus on, is surrounding myself with the absolute best possible people in my organization.
It can be, I think you were mentioning the other day, like one of the things that's kept you from growing is maybe hiring the wrong people and spending that time, that wasted energy. But you know, of course we're all trying to get it right. One of the things that I've noticed with our VA, is really the unanticipated retention capabilities that it has for our staff members. It really lightens the load for them. The VA can, you know, with the right SOPs, can do the work that maybe necessarily this individual may not want to do, or it's kind of just that one thing on their item, like they don't look forward to. And as managers, you know, you really want to get people on the right bus in the right seat. Right. And making sure that they're in that flow state. They're, you know, you want to have Michael Jordan playing post. I tell our team, right? You want to have Michael Jordan playing shooting guard to guard. So that's one of the capability, I guess, one of the unanticipated things in my journey with my VA that's been a big saver for us as well. So just a question to you, Brad. Thinking about someone who again is listening to this, they're trying to learn about a VA for the first time. Where have you seen VAs be really, or I guess, make an immediate impact in terms of the bottom line?
Well, it's been interesting to see. I mean, over the years, you know, again, servicing 75 different industries, you know, I mean, at this point, 300, 400, 500 clients that we've ended up supporting across the board. There's a whole range of areas, both on cost savings and efficiency, and also helping to drive top line, right? And so it really depends on where the business is and where their biggest challenges are that they're navigating, of where the most impact can happen. You know, and so that's part of the reason why we set our model up the way we set Outsource Access up is, I mean, you know, one of the things is we incorporate in the Philippines. So we hire everybody's full-time employees, pay their health insurance, pay their benefits. So we're attracting people that want to pursue this as a career path. Then we're providing them with tremendous amounts of support, training, and infrastructure. But then, you know, a big part is with clients is we have this very deep dive discovery process to get to that point, right? Is understand where your business is and where you're struggling. Some people don't have a top line problem, right? It's about just managing. We had a big e-commerce company we were working with. They were having tons of top line growth. What they were dealing with was just operational efficiency of handling orders when they were coming in, or if there was issues with the orders, or if orders didn't have, you know, proper information with them, or if they had a back order problem or whatever. You know, and this owner is like VP of operations, was personally handling all of these issues, right? A very expensive kind of employee that's the VP of operations that really should be spending her time like working with the CEO to go land big distribution accounts and drive top line. But instead she was absorbed in all this minutia. And so we ended up bringing on a VA and, you know, and Kevin, I'll just pause here. When I say the word virtual assistant, part of it, I'm honestly, we're working on kind of redefining it. Because when you say virtual assistant, most people think like low level individual that's going to manage my calendar or kind of, you know, book my travel. Unfortunately, that's the reference language point. And we still use it ourselves, you know, to a bit, but it's really offshore virtual staff, right? Because the nature of what our people are doing for our clients is really, really integrating and functioning, you know, as a full-time, you know, resource, you know, into their business, and taking on customer service and operations and marketing and bookkeeping. And a lot of times, you know, our model is about hiring people that are fast learners, good communicators, and can take feedback. And so a lot of times our staff are wearing multiple hats. I mean, I was talking to a client the other day that their VA is doing their bookkeeping, chasing down receivables. They're helping doing posts to the CEO's LinkedIn account. They're doing some social media graphic design, and they're also helping to pre-qualify leads that come in through their CRM, right? So it's this interesting collection of stuff that we got off the plate of some other people in the business that now the VA is doing, right? But they're doing much lower than like more than just like lower level admin things.
Yeah, and thanks for the correction there. I've never viewed our virtual staff member, Christian is his name, as a VA. In fact, he's the complete opposite. He is a staff member. We see him as that. I don't have him monitor my email or anything like that at all. He actually does, you know, it's actually interesting. My fiance works for one of the fastest growing tech startups in the world right now. And I'll just kind of leave the company name out of it. My first experience with this is when she first came on board the company, she was working with someone from India, and they were, you know, English speaking full time. And I started thinking, I was like, wow, that's genius. I mean, they're doing a lot of the prospecting for these individuals. They see them as team members. They are team members. They're building relationships with each other. They chat. They're you know, obviously friends on Instagram now. I talked to the staff member in India. Like, it's a part of the new way to scale, right? And it's transforming lives in other countries, but it's also helping and enabling people here in the United States specifically to do what they do best and be on the phones and do the closing calls. And so that was kind of the thinking I came in about. I listened to a podcast and I said, geez, I am just, look at my desk right now. It is just covered in post-it notes. It's got everything, just books, aisles, binders, everywhere. I need some help. And there were a couple things that I wanted to get done. And I knew that our staff members didn't have the capacity to do it, but would elevate them if we did. So we ended up going with Christian. If I could share real quick, Brad, with Christian, yeah. It was a terrific process. And, you know, they lined up, I think, seven potential candidates for us. All of them were high quality candidates. It was a tough decision. We end up going with CJ, I think more so, honestly, because he liked the San Antonio Spurs. I'm a big basketball fan. So we kind of connected there, and he had a little sales experience. And so we have him currently on our SOP, our standard operating procedure, to reach out to individuals on LinkedIn. We see LinkedIn as a great tool to build relationships. And so that's what we currently have him doing, which is driving a direct ROI on our sales. So for us, it is a no-brainer. And in fact, as we continue to scale out the membership, we're looking at even bringing on more virtual staffing as well, if we can replicate this process and get it right. So I just want, like, the reason I'm sharing this isn't to, again, blow smoke. It's really to educate anyone who is like just has like an idea, or anyone who is like me, or even you, Brad, at your old company, just overwhelmed with the amount of responsibilities, and you just need to know that things are being taken care of. So when we had Christian come on, and this would be the last thing I say, when we had him come on, Brad, he did too good of a job. It was that first month, he blew us away with how good of a job that he did. Almost like we're like, we had to give him more work because he went through our entire list in a month. So anyway, I just can't speak highly enough about it, but I know that this is kind of the common response you get though from a lot of the people you work with.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate sharing. I mean, it's like you said, it's not blowing smoke. I mean, it's just, it's literally anybody that's ever touched on this space, you know, mm-hmm. If you do the proper job of getting the right person and, you know, you have the right integration with them into the business, like it is, and that's why our tagline is redefining how you scale. I mean, when I stumbled upon this in my last business, as I shared at the beginning with blowing up teeth whitening pens and found it, once I started realizing it, I mean, as an entrepreneur and somebody who likes to start and grow things, like it's, I started carrying around like a magic toolbox. Like all of a sudden I had this knowledge of how to use these resources in a way that most people had no clue existed. I mean, I could get a business up and out of the ground in 2 weeks for less than $500. And in fact, I did actually with a whole other business I started called One-on-One Connections that was a great example, you know, of that. I mean, I was president of Atlanta during COVID. We couldn't meet in person. I'm like, hey, how do we get our members staying in touch? And so I got two of my VAs and we created a website and I said, hey, and I got a buddy of mine that is my partner that wrote some software that would pair people. And I said, hey, could you write software that would pair people in our organization? And I would get our VAs to go into email and do these email introductions at scale. And boom, like literally in a week and for less than $500, we got a business up out of the ground. And now we're doing this for 40 organizations globally, then 20,000 connections for member-based organizations, getting their members kind of connected together. So it's just, it's amazing what you can do and get out of the ground. Even my mom recently she's starting a swimming school business, right? Getting called Deb's, swim school and, teaching her this world, right? So she's got a website, but she needed updates done. She needed terms of service. She needed video testimonials done. So I taught her how to do WhatsApp. I taught her how to use Loom to do screencast recording. You know, my, 65 plus year mom, right? Learning how to do those things is now communicating with a guy in India and a guy in the Philippines to do her video editing and get her website updates done and so forth. So it's very empowering once you can wrap your head around it. And that's, to your point about how you started with Christian, that's why, one of the simplest ways, and I would encourage anybody on here, and I can share everybody kind of a template when we get done and kind of how to reach out and get it. But is it really starts with this two question exercise concept is, very simply, what are you or your staff doing that isn't the best use of your time and how many hours per month are you spending on it? Right. A super simple question, but a lot of people don't ever really take time to answer that question for themselves. And so when we go to work with a client, a lot of times we'll take the owner and any of their staff and say, hey, take these two questions. That's the first one, from your perspective, and give them psychological safety to actually tell you things that they don't think maybe is the best use of their time. But then how many hours per month they're spending on is another one, because a lot of people like, yeah, that doesn't matter. I don't spend that much time. But when they put a pencil to it, they're like, wow, I actually spend 6 hours a month doing TPS reports. But then the second question is, from your unique perspective in the business, what do you think we should be doing that we are not doing due to time or money or knowledge constraints? And I can't tell you, Kevin, how many hundreds and hundreds of companies, thousands probably plus at this point, that I tell them, hey, take these two simple questions. Don't add any more to it. Just two simple questions. Send it to your staff. Say, we're going to meet in a week and come back with all your answers. And it is unbelievable what people will unpack on things that, hey, I'm doing this function. And I spend 6 hours a month doing this. And if I could get this off my plate, I could focus on this. And from where I sit in the business, I think we should be going into the St. Louis market. There's huge opportunity there. I don't know why we're not doing it. I think we should tackle that market. And so we have owners and business owners that'll get these feedback from their employees. They've been with them for 7 or 8 years. And they're like, Kevin, you've been working with me for 8 years. Like, why? You just came back with 19 things we should be doing that we're not doing. Well, you never really asked me that way. And so, it's amazing. It's a great initial way to, it's just a good exercise. Even if you never do any outsourcing at all, but it's a great way to kind of unpack and find low hanging fruit for your staff to things that can get off their plate and where can they repurpose that time. And then things that, that they're not getting to, such as, video testimonials or doing more social media or cleaning up the CRM or launching in a new market. A lot of those things can all be solved by these offshore resources.
It's impactful, the kind of insights, as you just alluded to, that Christian has for us. I mean, you know, well, I sit down with him in meetings and ask him, you know, what are you seeing? You know, what are you seeing in this outreach? What's working? If we were going to do this, how would you go about it? And he's a part of the conversation. And so it's really interesting how it's been working out for us. But one of the things I want to kind of bring us back to is, you know, a lot of the companies and especially leaders listening to this, maybe they're in the impact space. Maybe they got a small, medium business, 11 to 50 employees, and they all want to scale, right? And oftentimes what you've alluded to is it's this mindset shift in order to scale. So why don't you share from like your current experience? You talked about what got you here won't get you there. How are you shifting right now in order to scale the company?
Yeah, I mean, it's the thing I've always heard. You know, I hadn't crossed that path in a lot of my past businesses because we hadn't gotten to a certain, you know, certain size. But certainly navigating it in this company as we've gotten to a very large size and a lot of people and a lot of complexity in a relatively short period of time. And yeah, I mean, going back to the, you know, Jim Collins, you know, kind of principles, it's about, you know, that continuing to reevaluate right people on the bus in the right seats and kind of where we're moving. To be able to level up to whatever that next tier of growth is going to, you know, is going to be. And that includes myself, right? I mean, and at some point I know a lot of CEOs that replace themselves. They're like, hey, I'm good at doing this until this point, but I need to bring in somebody else that's going to take us to this next level when it gets operational. So my journey, I mean, particularly in the last 12 months, to be honest, it's been a pretty, you know, kind of challenging one as we've kind of figured out that next phase of figuring out as we've grown, which people we have that are able to continue to raise their lid. I'm a huge John Maxwell fan. Anybody's read 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership, right? There's the law of the lid, right? Which is, there is a lid, right? For most people that they're able to get to, and beyond that is can be challenging. And so my scaling journey right now is, you know, and I think it's the CEO of Google or former CEO of Google, sorry, I'm not quoting it correctly, that the CEO's job is strategy and people. And so my entire world right now around scale is, as I mentioned, you know, we're in 75 different industries. We grew to that place and I was happy to do it because it made us very diversified. I could go to bed at night knowing that another COVID hit, my business wasn't going to be wiped out because we were all in commercial real estate. But now the strategy is where do we want to zero in on and choose some markets to go deep in where we have now evaluated. I mean, now we got a chance to look back and see, because one of the things we do is create these like super documented detailed playbooks for our clients. That's like one of the biggest things that they value is when they start working with us, we document every single thing that we're doing with screencasting and written out explanation. It's actually a nice byproduct that they get from us when they work with us. And so for some clients we've been with for 3 or 4 years, we have 80 and 90 page playbooks, right? So it's going back and just looking at the really interesting stuff we're doing for all these companies in all kinds of different capacities and deciding, you know, where do we want to go deep and drive our business and evaluating the market of what's the size of the market? What's the sustainability of it? Is it recession proof for the economics there? And so like home healthcare is one of those that we've ended up, it's a big growing market, big need. We got several clients in that space. They have a big HR administration function that they've got to find nurses, place nurses, track nurses, continuing education for nurses and so forth. And so we got one client that we have 8 staff with that's in home healthcare and health and human services that we're doing just an enormous amount of work where that's concerned. So I'm strategy, where do we go next and which markets we want to kind of focus on? And then the people side is the biggest thing I've realized, Kevin, is that when you want to go find the next level of people in your business as the CEO, you got to start now for who you want 2 years from now. Because those people are already working somewhere and they have jobs and they have opportunities. The next level 10 out of 10 or 11 out of 10 people you're looking for aren't sitting around looking for jobs. They are working somewhere else and you have to start as the CEO to build a relationship. You find those people, maybe you find them through a headhunter opportunity or you find them, you know, through LinkedIn or you know, sometimes I found great leaders by just reading an article in HBR and I go look up their company and you start reaching out and building a relationship as the CEO. And so the new CMO, one of the new CMOs we just brought on, we started that journey 9 months ago. She was working for another company and came to work with us and we had to do some, you know, a lot of conversations and they had to kind of embrace our business and who we are and what we're about and why do they want to jump ship and come, you know, come to us. So So for me, that's where I'm at, is figuring out, we're, you know, we got a 7-person C-suite organization. And so it's finding those right people, identifying them, putting them through all the proper assessments. I mean, we use culture index, we use predictive index, we use all kinds of different assessments. We try to measure 10 times and cut once when we make the selection, you know, with the people that come on board for us.
And Brad, with all the people, especially the successful people you've been able to surround yourself with, whether it's in the company, NEO, YPO, you know, these organizations, real leaders, what do you think the commonalities are between all the successful leaders that you've come across?
Yeah, I mean, and I've got a chance. Yeah, you were talking, I've been in EO for 11 years. I joined, you know, YPO last year. And so it's been an interesting set of leaders to kind of be around. I have to point back to, you know, to Jim Collins on, you know, the difference he talks about between level 4 and level 5 leadership. You know, those that were really high performing leaders is a humility factor. You know, that they are truly in it for something bigger than themselves. They're not there to make a mark and leave their own personal legacy. You know, they're there to, you know, have an impact with what the instrument of their business is, and the people that are in it, and seeing the people grow around them and see the impact it can make for employees, for their clients. And so, not to be cliche on it, but, you know, when I go back to level 5 leadership, you know, ego is the killer of everything, at least what I've seen, and some mishires that we've made, frankly, that was the exact factor. You know, I don't care how talented you are, how experienced you are, how knowledgeable you are, and so forth. If you can't present and communicate and collaborate with other fellow leaders or your employees through a lens of humility, regardless of how bright and intelligent you are, it's never going to land, and you're going to ostracize yourself. You know, the quote of, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And so, you know, I think that is still a ringing key differentiator I see in high performing leaders.
Powerful. Well, Brad, thanks for stopping by today here on the Real Leaders Podcast. We're going to ask you the last question we ask everyone that comes on this program, and maybe you just answered it, but enlighten us in all of this. What is your definition of a real leader?
Yeah, you know, reflecting, I mean, there's so many different ways of looking at leaders, and I know we were going to end up, you know, ending on that prior, you know, question. But for me, that's truly been central of what I've seen, the difference between the highest performing leaders and those that fall short is really just understanding, you know, two fundamentals. I add another one to it, which is that human beings just want to be recognized that they exist, you know, because not everybody's going to be a high performing, high growth leader, but whatever they do really, really well. And be recognized that they exist, and letting people feel like they're being a part of something bigger than themselves. And so when I look at some of the differentiating factors of fellow leaders and some things I try to do, like one of the things I do that probably gives me more energy and has more impact than anything is I still write personal welcome messages to every single frontline employee that joins our company. Every single frontline, I have one of my staff that creates a list for me of every frontline VA that joins. And people are like, you're the CEO. You're spending probably 10 to 12 hours a month, right? And I'm a little bit behind for the last month, but we'll actually write personal welcome messages to every frontline employee, just welcome them to the company, asking about their family, asking what books and podcasts they're listening to, letting them know we're committed to their growth, and have a true, authentic dialogue back and forth, you know, kind of with them. And Frank Blake, who did a big turnaround with Home Depot, he attributes, you know, writing 100 handwritten letters to frontline employees is one of the biggest things he did to help turn around the culture, you know, Home Depot when he was kind of taking over. And so I think the humility factor of doing something bigger than yourselves and helping recognize that employees just want to be recognized. And it's just amazing the small things you can do just out of the blue on a Tuesday. If I'm driving in my car and I think about something, I'll go write a personal message to a frontline operations manager or someone, just say, hey, I just want to know, I recognize what you're doing. I appreciate it. And it's had a huge impact and why. And the last thing I'll add to that, Kevin, this is something that was told and I learned from Bernd Harnisch that spoke recently, is in addition to giving people accolades, is ask them how they did it. Because a lot of times we give feedback in one way. Kevin, you did a great job. You grew this, you know, department. I'm sure that took a lot of ton of work and so forth. Great job. But then to ask the extra question, Kevin, tell us how you did it. And so Vern shared that at a conference we were at. And so we started in our company. So when I give accolades in our big company chat board, I'll say, hey, great job. But I'll say, tell us how you did it. And Kevin, it's unbelievable how they will unpack when you give them that stage. And they'll just unload. And what's been amazing about it is it gives them that stage to tell us how they pulled it off. And it gives me insight on things that I had no idea about. One of our frontline employees in the Philippines went on about Henry Ford and how she had read all these biographies about Henry Ford and was quoting Henry Ford about what helped her in her leadership role, you know, in our company. So we actually have a whole How I Did It book now. So we copy and paste people's answers and it becomes our culture, part of our culture book now. So we can show people, our employees in their own words, you know, how they kind of pulled things off. So I went down a couple different rabbit holes there, but obviously something I'm very passionate about. And but I would encourage anybody to try that out, even with your own kids. I did that with my daughter. You know, we had a great softball game. She had a great hit. Normally I'd say, Ella, tell me, you know, great job, fantastic, great job in the game. But I asked her, tell us, how'd you do it? And she said, Dad, well, remember that time we were sitting in the driveway and you were helping me with this and you actually made me shoot a video of myself doing it. And my friend Sally, right before I hit, said this word of encouragement to me. Had no idea, right? But asking her, how'd you pull it off, unpacked for me a set of things I wasn't even, you know, familiar with. So that's one tactical thing I'll leave with everybody to maybe try out with employees or the kiddos.
I love it. It is the little things indeed. For Brad Stevens, I'm Kevin Edwards, asking you to go out there, have humility, help people get recognized, and always keep it real. Thanks, Brad.
Thanks, Kevin. Enjoyed it.
Hey, Real Leaders, thanks again for listening to this amazing episode. And if you're someone like me who goes all the way to the end just to make sure I can extract as much information, education, and inspiration out of every single interview, might I suggest you check out our magazine. If you go online to realleaders.com today, you're going to get the first 30 days for free where you're going to be able to access all of our magazines, courses, and live events from some of the top thought leaders around the world. All you have to do is go online to realleaders.com and click the subscribe button in the top right corner to get your free 30-day trial right now. Again, that's real-leaders.com. Thanks again for being a real leader, and always keep it real.